And you can use PPC to gain rankings because obviously Amazon's algorithm takes into account your relevancy of keywords. So every keyword that you convert for, even for sponsored product PPC ads, the algorithm is going to rank you higher organically for your organic listing for those same keywords. So I knew that over time, PPC was going to get more and more expensive. And sure enough, it has. Every year, it just gets more expensive. And also part of it, too, is just the supply and demand. More competition's coming in, a lot of the Chinese competitors coming in and just flooding the market with a lot of products, doing a lot of PPC, driving up bid costs.
Hello and welcome to the e-commerce podcast. I believe that there is more than enough content focused on e-commerce marketing and not enough content celebrating the real heroes of e-commerce, those running the operation. Each week, we find and interview an e-commerce operations expert to share the secrets behind how some of this industry's most exciting businesses are run. I'm your host, Norbert Strappler, the CEO of ThinkSpider. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ecom Ops podcast. And today I am happy to welcome Kusha, who is Inc. 500 entrepreneur with a remarkable history of launching and exiting several seven and eight figure e-commerce businesses. Wow, that's insane. A decade of experience in scaling brands on Amazon. Kusha has mastered the art of driving sales through advanced marketing strategies and data analysis and impactful branding. And we are talking today about his recent venture, Kazam, which is a SaaS-based tool, AI-based, of course. What's out there today without AI? Transforming the way Amazon advertising campaigns are optimized and offering user-significant profitability and organic ranking improvement. So welcome to the show, Kusha. Great to have
you. Thank you. Yeah, what a great introduction. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us. Please introduce yourself. Let us know a bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so basically my story started about a little over a decade ago. I was actually at the time before we had our own business, I was working in the gyms. So I was running a large gym in San Diego and I had like 70 employees, 30 trainers. And I had like a dozen certifications as a trainer myself. And I was still training clients myself, mostly for fun. At the gym and to lead by example, I'd come across some articles at the time in the journal Strength and Conditioning about something called blood flow restriction training, which really caught my attention because it seemed very counterintuitive to what you would expect with health and fitness. And apparently, as I dove deeper, I realized there was hundreds of studies on this idea of occlusion training or blood flow restriction training for gaining muscle while lifting light weights. But at the time, there's no products on the market that were affordable. There was only these expensive $2,000, $4,000 devices that were more for like physical therapy purposes. And most of the people who were using it out there were, you know, in the bodybuilding space, were just using wrist wraps and knee wraps, which are really cumbersome and not really efficient to use, especially by yourself, trying to wrap a knee wrap or a wrist wrap around your upper arm by yourself with one hand and to do it symmetrically. So I had come up with an idea to launch a physical product online that was going to be basically a practical blood flow restriction band, a BFR band. And I didn't know anything about e-commerce at the time. And my wife, basically, she was the one who did some research and said, you know what, we should start with Amazon. And at the time, I don't think we were really even shopping much on Amazon. I mean, we buy everything on Amazon, obviously, now. It's like it's a staple for us. But back then, it's like, I don't even think we were like Prime members or really shopping there. So we just stumbled upon it as just beginners. And FBA back then, similar to today, FBA just, it was so appealing because they do all the heavy lifting for you. Amazon's taking care of all the third-party logistics, the fulfillment, distributing the inventory across the country for you, and even handling most of the customer service that you don't realize behind the scenes, like all the refunds and things like that. They're taking care of basically everything. So we started there and I was sourcing some product from the US and we were shipping it to FBA and didn't know what we were doing, didn't know anything about Amazon SEO or Amazon organic rankings or PPC or anything back then. We just launched it just organically and just from it being a blue ocean, that product started slowly taking off. We were selling maybe a few dozen units a month, and which was awesome at the time, some extra money. And then that quickly ballooned over time to become a full-time business. And I ended up leaving, obviously, my full-time job, working on that business full-time. And then fast forward a few years, we just started getting really proficient with Amazon, really understanding the game of Amazon and how Amazon works and how to scale products on Amazon. We ended up launching a different product called Vibe, which was a kind of a competitor to Theragun and HyperIce and HyperVolt, things like that. It was a massage gun. And this is like when the massage gun, you know, market was really just at its infancy in the very, very beginning. And we basically got this product up. And within, I think, the first month, I invested, I think, I don't know, $10,000 into the first batch of units, something very small. Just wanted to see how it would do. I wasn't very confident that it would do super, super well because I didn't know anything about it. And I think it was my first product that had batteries and I didn't know anything about hazardous goods and dangerous goods, that sort of thing. So started with a very small order and those units sold out like in the first like few days or the first week. And so I just every order, I would place an order and then like double that order and then we'd sell out in the next week. And then I'd double it again and we'd sell out in the next week. And we just kept growing and growing until we scaled to like over a million a month in revenue. And then we ended up selling that business within about basically 18 months of inception. So that was a separate portfolio that I'd created, a separate brand that I ended up splitting off from our core product. And then we sold that in 2019. And then 2020 rolled around and then obviously lockdowns were happening. People were working out at home. So BFR bands and fitness stuff did very well. We got very lucky that the market just surged for those types of products. And at the height of that, we decided to sell that brand as well. So in 2020, we ended up having our second exit, sold that brand. And then basically I got very lucky back then that I was able to negotiate to keep my Amazon account. So I didn't sell the Amazon account and I retained a lot of my other brands, my other products and brands. So I didn't sell all of them off and I retained those and scaled them up and added some new products and brands. And then about a year and a half later, I ended up selling that portfolio as well. So I exited that one in end of 2021. And then since then, basically done the same thing, created a new seller account, a new portfolio products, and just trying to do it again, really just enjoying the game and really enjoying my thing is I really enjoy the process of just creating brands, building products. I don't really do wholesale or drop shipping or anything like that. That's something I've never really done. I've really always been into custom products and tooling and molds and building something from the ground up.
Developing something, let it grow, and then find something new.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool. I love it. And now you also found out some kind of strategies on how to grow organically or with ads on Amazon. And therefore, you built a SaaS product. So actually from the fitness studio, from the gym, to selling products and now being a software company as well. Yeah. Tell us a bit more about your SaaS application.
Sure. Yeah, I'm very new to the software space. I've always been in physical products, but in the last year and a half, it's actually been on my mind for several years, but about a year and a half ago, I decided to take action and have my developers start actually building my idea into bring it to fruition. And my idea was that PPC has become a fundamental piece of organic rankings. I feel like it's become a piece in most categories, maybe not all, but I would say most categories, especially the competitive ones, PPC needs to be kind of an integral evergreen piece to sustain your rankings. And you can use PPC to gain rankings because obviously Amazon's algorithm takes into account your relevancy of keywords. So every keyword that you convert for, even for sponsored product PPC ads, the algorithm is going to rank you higher organically for your organic listing for those same keywords. So I knew that over time, PPC was going to get more and more expensive. And sure enough, it has. Every year, it just gets more expensive. And also part of it, too, is just the supply and demand. More competition's coming in, a lot of the Chinese competitors coming in and just flooding the market with a lot of products, doing a lot of PPC, driving up bid costs. So I wanted something that I could use for myself and for my clients, because we have an agency as well. I wanted something that we could use that would give us more of an advantage and also make us more profitable. Because my whole philosophy is that if you want to build something, you should always build it with the end in mind. And for me, I always like building something with the intention of eventually exiting it. And to exit, you have to be profitable. It's hard to sell a company that's not very profitable, even if it does a lot in revenue. And you'd be surprised. I remember many times in the last decade, I'd meet so many entrepreneurs that were doing 10 or 20 million a year with like less than a 5% profit margin. And I just thought, wow, that's a lot of exposure and a lot of headache to have a huge team, all this risk and big building office lease and all this stuff to make 5% margin, which could easily get compressed very quickly if a new competition comes in or the market changes. So I thought, wow, that is a stressful business. I'd rather run a much smaller business, but more profitable business. Take the ego out of it. Focus on just having a very fun lifestyle business with low headache, low stress, and just live a long, happy life doing that. So that's always been my philosophy. Long story short, with our software Kazam, the intent of it was to create a software where the core of the software is that it does many things, but the core thing is that it's supposed to help you basically reduce your bid cost as your organic listing ranks higher. So it's tracking your organic rankings. And so what happens is you're going to basically have duplicate positions. You'll have more real estate on the page because you're going to have your sponsored listing and your organic listing. And in some cases, you might want to keep that, depending on what your goals are and what you're trying to do in your category. You may want to have multiple positions on the page. But in many cases, I found for many keywords, I wasn't finding a big difference whether I turned the ad off and then maintained that organic position or kept that ad on. And so I find that having that organic ranking and not paying the PPC cost is obviously way more profitable and you don't sacrifice a whole lot. The caveat to that is what I have found is over time, if you keep the ads off, you'll start losing some organic rankings unless you're supporting it with other things. So you could supplement that with other traffic like TikTok traffic, email traffic, whatever it may be. If you're sending outside signals, outside traffic to support that, you could maintain that ranking organically. And in some cases, you may not have to do any of that and you could sustain that organic ranking if you're getting really good conversion compared to your competition. Like if you have a really strong moat because you have a really well differentiated, protected product with intellectual property and people aren't copycatting you, things like that. But in most categories, it's not really the case. You're going to have some decent competition and the competition will be doing PPC. And as they convert and as new sellers come into the space, especially these black hat Chinese competitors that are coming in, they're not playing by the same rules. They're coming in and they're doing things that are not really with Amazon's policies. So they're coming in and ranking quickly, doing whatever they're doing. So they're taking away market share because they are coming into the top of search very quickly. So yeah, I believe that long-term, it makes sense to have PPC going and not necessarily keep it off indefinitely. So the way the software works is as you come into the top of the page rankings, the PPC will then start reducing the bids. So you'll start to spend less and your profitability and your tacos and ACOS will actually improve. It'll go down. Your ROAS will go up. And if you were to start slipping rankings, then it will do the opposite. It will start to rebalance and bring you back up with your PPC spend to try in an effort to bring you back into that position. So that's the main core of it. It obviously does many other things and we have a lot of other concepts in the pipeline as well that we'll iterate over time. But you know, as a kind of a minimum viable product, I wanted to keep it very clean and simple and have the software really focus on that. But the software, in terms of who it's designed for really a beginner intermediate person who wants something to be hands-off. Let's say they don't have the budget to hire someone to run their PPC campaigns. They can't spend $800, $1,500, $2,000, $4,000 a month, whatever it is, to hire someone to run it. They could have the software run it, and the software uses a series of logic and AI, rule sets and AI, to basically run your PPC for you. It'll create, all you have to do is literally just go in with a few clicks, say what SKU you want to advertise, and all you do is set a couple parameters, like your minimum, maximum bid as guardrails. And then you set like your target ACOS or ROAS for that product. And then that's it. The system will then create all the necessary campaigns for that particular product. And you can just sit back, let it do its thing. You can check up on it, which we obviously recommend. Keep an eye on it. Go into the analytics dashboard, see how it's performing. And if someone is more advanced, they will also appreciate the software because the software also allows someone who's more advanced to go in there and they can get more granular. It'll allow them to do things like more advanced day parting and seasonality and going in there and setting certain negative exact match parameters or targeting certain competitor ASINs and things like that. It's very robust and very flexible, but I designed it to interface for somebody who's a beginner or intermediate. So it could just be something you just get started quickly and just go.
That's really very interesting. And I think this can help sellers quite a lot because the UI and the behavior of the regular Amazon ad account is, yeah, let's say, not really the smoothest. And I like the way you think about it. So you wanted to deliver something that an average starter can use. And that sounds like one of your products that you released. Yeah. So something that is easy and smooth and nice to have and nice to work with. Let's talk a bit about Amazon. With your really extensive experience on Amazon, what are some common misconceptions that you think new sellers have about the platform?
I think today there's a lot of misconceptions that Amazon is too competitive, that it's too hard. And I think that that is partly true, that it obviously has become a lot more competitive. And I think my feelings regarding, like, if somebody came to me 10 years ago and said, hey, I know nothing about e-commerce or Amazon, do you recommend launching a product on Amazon? I would have said, yeah, absolutely. Launch a product. Don't quit your day job just yet, but go on there, launch it, and you can get something up and running very quickly and profitable very quickly back then. Today, you have to expect that it's going to be a little bit more of a slow growth process. It's not going to be exponential in most cases. It could be, depending on how much power you're putting behind it. If you're putting a lot of horsepower behind it and a lot of capital behind it and a lot of focus behind it, you could potentially ramp something up much quicker. But you should expect that this is a 6 to 12 month game, not a 1 to 3 month game to launch something. And again, if somebody's mm-hmm. brand new, I wouldn't recommend they quit their day job. I recommend that they do it slowly, methodically, let it ramp up. Again, Amazon is doing most of the heavy lifting, so you could still be working a different job or doing whatever else you're doing outside of e-commerce or Amazon. Even when we had our eight-figure business, we were only getting a few customer questions a day through the Seller Central buyer-seller messages, like very few customer messages coming through via email or through Amazon per day. It was very minimal, surprisingly. You would expect with a high-volume business, you'd expect a lot more. But in most cases, I found that it's totally manageable with a very small team. You could honestly do it yourself.
That's very interesting. And do you have some actionable tips for enhancing Amazon's organic rankings? How can I start a business there, sell my product? And let's say I know that I would start at the bottom, but are there some tips that I could better grow and increase my product's visibility on Amazon?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of things you could do for Amazon SEO, but I would say the most important thing is focusing on relevancy when you're creating your product. So when you're picking a product, you want to first look at something that's already working in the marketplace. I don't recommend trying to reinvent the wheel and create something that there's no demand for. I've done that many times, and then you end up killing the product because there's no demand for it. And you invest so much money in it, and then it's like nobody's even searching for that. So I would go after things where there's already a high search volume for it, or high enough to where it makes sense and it's worth your time and investment. So once you find a category where there's some competitors that prove that it's already working, then you would go in there and you'd say, okay, how can I do this a little bit better? And I wouldn't invest a ton of money initially into modifying the product to make it super custom, because that can be very expensive with engineering costs and tooling and molds and things. Instead, I would try to make a small improvement, focus on that one thing, look at the reviews, especially the 3-star reviews. If you look at your competitors' 3-star reviews, those are very telling because those are usually very authentic, very real. And if you look at those, that'll tell you what that person liked about the product, but maybe what was missing, what they were, you know, short of. And that could be the one thing that you could use to make your product a little bit better. So you make that small improvement, and whatever that small improvement is, you want to showcase that as well as your primary search terms in your title, number one. That's your first place you want to put it. And then in your first bullet point, that would be the next place. And then the next places would be obviously the supporting bullet points and the premium A+ in the actual text fields, in the alt text. You could even name the file names of the images in your main carousel images and the A+ section. You could, the filing conventions or the naming conventions of those file names could have keywords in them as well, which could help you. I think those are all nominal things. Those aren't, I don't think, 80-20 tasks. But I would say the 80-20 needle movers would be the title and the first bullet point, not only from a standpoint of basically telling Amazon what you're relevant for, but also if you have a very clear and concise title that's not super keyword stuffed and it's very clear what your value proposition is and it speaks to a very specific market segment or a certain customer, you're much more likely to get that click and that conversion. So that's what you want. You want it so that when someone goes to Amazon, they search for a certain keyword, that they see your product in the search results and they say, wow, that one is exactly what I'm looking for, from not just the main image. And obviously you want the main image to stand out, but the title needs to be very clear and speak to that. And sometimes what you can do too, what I found is you can take an existing product that's out in the marketplace and just put a different angle on it. Maybe everyone's focusing on one angle and you're actually focusing more on using it for a different angle that no one's really speaking about yet and using it for a different purpose. Or taking it from one category, maybe automotive, and then putting it in health and fitness or whatever it may be.
Yeah, cool. Well, we have a lot to talk about. So there's really much insights. One of the most important questions I have based on what you've said now, how do I find out if a product might probably work good or not? So what steps do I need to take to check this?
Yeah, I definitely like the Jungle Scout Chrome extension. I think that's a very useful tool. There's many other tools, I'm sure, that probably do the same thing, but that's one that I've always liked. because it gives you a rough estimate of what people are doing in that market segment in a certain category in terms of unit sales, in terms of overall sales. You can see how much they're doing. You can see how much is coming from PPC. If you have competitors that are showing up in sponsored and they don't really show up well in organic, then you don't really necessarily want to take that into account as much. I wouldn't put as much weight on that.
We will link that Chrome extension in the comments. What's the name of the Chrome extension?
It's called Jungle Scout. Jungle Scout, the Chrome extension.
Jungle Scout, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's a good one.
Perfect.
Yeah, and so that one I like to use because it will not only tell you the unit sales and volume, but also there's some tools in there that if you click on the net profit of a product, it'll bring up a calculator. And you can tweak some of the variables like the listing price and the COGS, the cost of goods, to see how profitable it would be if you were selling that type of item. So you can get an idea of, okay, if I was selling that many units per day of this type of product at that price, this is what my profit would look like. So you kind of have to reverse engineer, like, does this make sense? And I would try to pick products where you have at least a 30% margin in the beginning, because over time it might go down. So you want to have at least 30% gross profit margin after Amazon fees and such, not including PPC costs, but including Amazon referral fees and such. So I would definitely start with Jungle Scout, look at that. And also it does tell you, and I have found this to be fairly truthful and accurate, Jungle Scout will give you an opportunity score for a category. So if you go to Amazon and you search for a certain keyword, it'll bring up search results. And if you just click the Chrome extension, it'll bring up the Jungle Scout Chrome extension. It'll show you a list of all those search results and how much they're selling and whatnot. But at the top, it'll also say opportunity score. And the higher the number, the better. Because if it's a low number, it's basically saying that, hey, this is low demand and high competition, which you don't want. That's like the worst. Mm-hmm. Or it'll say medium demand, high competition. Or high demand, but high competition. What you really want, ideally, is like high demand, but low competition. That would be a great kind of blue ocean category. That's like skating to where the puck is going to be. The old Wayne Gretzky analogy of skating to where the puck is going to be versus where it is. You want to try to get ahead of the curve.
It sounds like a 2 or 3 digit .com domain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You want to try to get ahead of that. It's like Bitcoin. In the past 10, 15 years ago, if you got a bunch of Bitcoin, you'd be a genius now. But I think that it goes to my point that I believe, and maybe not everyone agrees with this, but I believe that you should stay within your circle of competence on Amazon. Yeah. So whatever your background is, if you come from a health and fitness background, I would probably stay within health and wellness and fitness and such with products, because that's where most likely you're going to have a little bit more insider knowledge. You're going to understand the customer at more depth because you are the customer. You're living and breathing it. You understand it. You understand the pain points. You can speak to it better. I would stay in that and not try to venture out too much unless you really enjoy it or want to. I would try to stay in that circle, because if you try to start venturing out into areas where you don't know anything about it, you've lost really your competitive advantage. You don't really understand the market or the customer as well. So that's what I try to always do. And that's always worked out well for me.
Cool. And do you think that Google search engine optimization and Amazon search engine optimization can be compared? Is this similar to each other? Does patterns that work on Google work also on Amazon and vice versa?
I don't know a lot about Google SEO. I'm not a Google SEO guy, so I don't know exactly. I know that Amazon's not really so much about backlinking and things like that, but it's similar. And I think that you can actually use them to support each other. So you can use Google to support your Amazon business in certain ways, because Amazon was built on Google. Amazon used Google to launch their business. And if you go to Google and you search certain keywords, you'll see a lot of Amazon organic listings and sponsored listings as well. And a lot of that you're not even paying for. Like, you could be getting traffic from Google, you know, really at Amazon's expense. You're paying them the referral fee for that reason, because they're bringing you the customer, but they're doing that for you. So I do think that there are some similarities in terms of they're both looking for what's the most relevant search result. And I definitely think AI is becoming more integral to both search engines and how they factor that in. I think Amazon is factoring in AI more. And you can see that just when you go to like Amazon and you search for something, it'll now try to populate what you've bought previously it'll come up in the search box and show like, hey, you bought this product specifically previously. Is this what you were looking for? Trying to get you to rebuy it. So I can see they're trying to use AI in many different ways. And I think that's only going to grow over time. In the near term, I think that's going to become more integral.
And do you still recommend for specific products having a very own web store? Or would you recommend to really focus on, let's say, Amazon and build everything around there and forget about the own web store?
I think it's so inexpensive to build your own Shopify store now. You can get something up and running with a Shopify template pretty easily. It definitely will take a little bit of effort and a little bit of research on all the apps and integrations that need to be added to optimize it. But I think just to get something up and running, I think that they have a cheap plan for $40 a month. I think it, you know, makes sense. Once you reach a certain level, I wouldn't do it initially. I wouldn't waste the time or the money on that initially. But once you reach a certain level where the brand is doing $10,000 a month in sales or something like that, you're going to start getting some overflow traffic where people might go to Google and search, and you want them to find your website and buy from you directly. Or using your product inserts, you may be able to get them to go to your website, register for a warranty or whatever it may be, or view your, you know, video guides or whatever it is, and try to use that as a way to get them into your ecosystem, either with pixels or with email opt-ins or whatever it may be, or enticing offers. That's what ideally what you want, because over time, ideally, as you scale, you want to try to build a bigger asset. You want to think of these as like Monopoly with like properties. You want to think of it like Amazon is one property, but there's many other properties. You can build a website, like a Shopify store, as one property. You could build another website separate from your Shopify store as just a content property, as like a third-party blog or an association, and use that as a traffic source for your business. So you want to think of it more like Monopoly. Like, these are separate properties and entities that I'm going to, it's like a web. They're all connected. I want to have them work together. But when you say, again, if your goal is to exit, having more assets becomes more valuable. If you have all your eggs on Amazon, that might lower the multiple or the valuation of what you might get versus if you had half your revenue coming from Shopify and half from Amazon. Now that's more distributed. You actually own the customer. You have an email list that you can email to make money. You're not just solely on reliant on one platform.
Yeah. I need to agree to that. And I've seen that already working very properly with a customer many years ago. They just sold coconut oil. Mm-hmm. And that was really absolute boomer a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And they also did it like that. They had a blog. On the blog, they wrote about all the benefits of coconut oil and how to use it in healthcare and how to use it for cooking and how to use it for this and for that. And then they linked the Amazon products that they had on Amazon as ads to the blog. So no one really had the mind that, okay, this would belong together. And the blog, of course, had a very good ranking organically, and the sales have been done on Amazon. So it's really something that is proven that that works out actually for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And that is here and there, that you come to a blog and then product is referenced to Amazon or to a store where it's actually sold. So the idea is really, I think, depending on the product, of course, an interesting game that you can play. Your SaaS tool, KSM, is it working only in the US, or can you use it across the entire Amazon?
Yeah, you can connect. You just That's connect cool. it to your Seller Central and it'll connect to any of those. Yeah, you can choose exactly. There's a toggle in the upper right of the dashboard. You can toggle between your different accounts.
Awesome. So we will also link your tool, of course. Very interesting. And do you have any quick wins for our audience that just started on Amazon and want to sell some goods? What should they consider for the products?
The biggest thing, like I mentioned previously, is don't reinvent the wheel. Try to find something that's already working. But you want to find something out there that's already getting traction. So again, if you're using Jungle Scout, what you want to look for is try to find a category, a niche, or maybe even a sub niche. Try to go like maybe one layer deeper, because if you're at like a high level niche, like dog leash, that would be too broad. It'd be way too competitive. And I don't recommend starting there, especially if you're a beginner. Try to go a few layers deeper to where it's a little bit more niche, less competition, but still good demand. And try to find something where there's at least four competitors that are, you know, doing at least $10,000 a month in sales. If they're doing that, then you know that there's opportunity in that category. And what you want to be looking for is, are these competitors, do their listings look really strong or do they look really weak? And what I mean by that is, when you go to their listings, does the English make sense? Sometimes you see these Chinese sellers, the copy doesn't make any sense. Like, it's not, the brand is weird. It's like a bunch of random letters. The title and bullets don't really make sense. They have bad grammar. The images are very Photoshop.
Keyword stuffing like hell.
It looks very bad. And so that's, you have to look at those. You want to be looking for opportunities. It's like real estate. If you were going to buy a property, you'd want to buy a property where there's some value add. You don't want to buy something where there's no meat on the bone. So you want to look at it like, where's the meat on the bone in this category? If I go in, okay, I could do better creatives. So you could simply go into a category, do the same thing, but just have better creatives. And when I say creatives, I'm talking about the images, the video content, the premium A+. You get a better creatives, better copy, and you could win at the same price point selling, you know, pretty much the same product. in many cases. That's not a great long-term strategy, but short-term, that would be a very quick, easy win, is just look for a category where no one has strong creatives and you just go in and you look more professional, you look better, yours is more attractive, you have maybe better like UGC, user-generated content on there, so it looks more organic and native and resonates better with real customers.
Are you always for fulfilled by Amazon or fulfilled by merchant?
I usually fulfill by Amazon majority of the time. For larger items, it might make more sense to do fulfilled by merchant and just use a 3PL. The only downside to that is that in many cases, you're not going to have seller fulfilled Prime. You're not going to have the Prime badge. So, You know, you have to look at the category. If all your competitors are not using Prime, which is very common in like large item categories like furniture or large appliances, most of them are probably not using FBA, or if they're expensive items, probably not using FBA. They're using their own 3PL. And so if all your competitors don't have Prime, then that's not necessarily a competitive disadvantage to you. So you don't necessarily have to do that. But at the same token, if you do use it, it becomes an immediate advantage to you. If all your competitors are using seller fulfilled and then you're doing FBA, that could be an immediate advantage because the customer is going to see, hey, I can get this with free 2-day shipping. So it gives you definitely, it always has an advantage to it. Comes with a lot of caveats, obviously. There could be a lot of lost inventory and Amazon mixing up your inventory and things like that. But a lot of those things can be reconciled, so not a huge deal.
Okay, wow, that was amazing. So a lot of insights on how to grow on Amazon. And maybe the last question for today, as usual, who has told you the most about e-commerce in your career?
Gosh, I don't know if there's any one person. I learned from a few people. I would say two people I've learned a lot from was a guy named Drew Cannoli, who had a brand called Organifi. I think he still owns it, actually. And I worked with him early on in the days of e-commerce over a decade ago. And I learned a lot from him and his team. And then also a friend of mine named Glenn Ledwell. He runs a company called Mind Movies, which is more like the personal development space, more of a software type of business. Learned a lot from him early on as well. This is over a decade ago, but I learned a ton from these guys and just the whole world of e-commerce. And actually, that's what initially got me really interested in e-commerce, because I would see my friend Drew coming to the gym 3 times a day. And I'm like, how I'm here coming into the gym at 5 a.m., leaving at 7 p.m., killing myself, trading my time for hours. And this guy had so much freedom of time. And I was like, wow, this guy's traveling. He's got freedom of time. I'm like, I got to be doing it like this. So that's what kind of drew me into the world of e-commerce.
Thank you so much for your time, Kusha. It was really a pleasure talking to you and learning from you especially. And good luck with your product. We will link it here, also the Chrome extension. And if you liked it, just come back for the next episode of the EcomOps podcast and give us a like.
Thanks for tuning in to today's EcomOps podcast. If our journey into the heart of e-commerce operations inspired you, don't forget to subscribe, like, and leave a review. Share this episode with your e-commerce circle and help us spread the knowledge. Stay tuned for more exciting episodes on everything from marketing to operations and beyond. This is Norbert signing off until our next e-commerce adventure.